Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Coming up on the show, we talk to Randy Voller, former mayor of Pittsburgh, North Carolina, also a former head of the Democratic Party of North Carolina, as well as a Bernie delegate. But first, as always, it's time to hear from Stacy with the hottest headlines of the day.
Well, it's getting very hot in the Democratic primaries, the race to be the nominee for the Democratic Party. Why does Michael Bloomberg think Democrats want another billionaire businessman for president? Why does Bloomberg think the American people want to try another billionaire again, asks NBC News. As I see it, there are two possible scenarios. One is that Bloomberg has billionaire brain, the state of being a billionaire, wherein no one ever tells you no, and so you begin to believe that all your ideas, no matter how implausible, are beautiful. Many a company has been run aground by billionaire brain.
Look, the Democrats have daddy issues. They can't get it together without a big Mac daddy to help them get through the day because all their cocked ideas are not cutting it. The electorate sees right through it. They're like, oh man, not another crazy, radical, left-wing, psychotic idea. We need to bring in a billionaire to calm everybody down.
That's true. And you know what? He had to apologize for his signature policy as mayor of New York, which was stop and frisk. And of course, I think it's quite difficult, and we'll talk to Randy Voller about this, but it's quite difficult to be nominated for the Democratic presidency, to be the candidate, if you can't get the black vote. So his stop and frisk thing, which targeted the African American community in New York, he's now apologizing for it after all those years of forcing the police. The police union, by the way, came out and said, oh, thanks, dude. You're the one that, you know, harmed our relationships with the community by forcing us to, you know, meet these quotas.
Wrong. Look, if Trump taught the elector anything, these politicians, never apologize. Okay. Never apologize. That's the first mistake. You can't go around apologizing. You got to always be closing. If Bloomberg feels he made a mistake, you got to spin it as something positive. Okay, that's how you become president. That's how you become a success. Never apologize. Never admit you're wrong. Look at AOC. She's a Democrat. If she were eligible, she could beat Trump. She could be the president because she never apologizes. She just spins everything. It's everything spun. That's the way you get successful. That's the way you do it. This is American. We don't, you know, apologize. We're Americans.
Also entering the race is Deval Patrick of Bain Capital and AmeriQuest. He's, of course, a close associate, I think best friends, actually, with Obama. And he was some sort of politician from Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's a plutocracy, isn't it? $1, one vote. One man who's keeping it real, who's really standing up for democratic values, is Randy Voller. I mean, he's setting the pace. He's the guy people look to now and say, let's go to some old-time, real-time politics. Randy Voller, welcome back.
Great to be here, Max.
All right, so Randy, let's get into this, what's happening out there in the Democratic Party. President Obama warned Democratic candidates recently against going too far left, saying that, quote, voters don't want to see crazy stuff. Your thoughts, Randy?
Well, you have to consider the audience. He was speaking to a group of wealthy donors, and these folks want to be calmed down about the ideas that are generally being put out by Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, some of them by Andrew Yang. So he says, oh, look, we're not a country that, you know, revolution's going to work. You know, Bernie's talking about our revolution. And of course, Elizabeth Warren is talking about, you know, ideas of taxing the billionaire class you're talking about, and he's trying to smooth ruffled feathers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, do you think that Mayor Bloomberg possibly entering the race, or Deval Patrick, do you think this will actually impact Biden's support? Because this is where they're saying it'll hit him, hit the race, is that, you know, he's kind of a bland, middle of the road, sort of neoliberal, sort of right of center, sort of, you know, Democrat?
I think the fact that Deval Patrick and Michael Bloomberg have both decided to get into the race speaks squarely to the weakness of the Biden campaign.
Right. It does appear that the front runner, at least nationally, but not state by state, Joe Biden, has some serious flaws. And the field of Democratic candidates keeps expanding. And that's got to be a problem, Randy, because how do people focus on anything if you've got, you know, 20 or more candidates running? It seems like a crazy circus.
Well, first of all, you have to focus on how the primaries work in this country. President Trump would not have been elected if he was running on the Democratic side because we don't have winner-take-all primaries. They have winner-take-all primaries on the Republican side, which allowed him to win even though he did not have a majority of the vote in many of the states that he won in 2016. So on our side, when you look at the rules for the convention that'll be held, the nominating convention in Milwaukee, you have to focus on the fact that it could be a brokered convention. And because they changed the rules for how the voting will be done and that the superdelegates will not be allowed to vote on the first ballot, it's highly possible we could get to a brokered convention. And you must consider the idea that some of these candidates entering the race are doing so merely to put delegates in their pocket. I mean, you'd have to ask the question, and why did Mayor Bloomberg file in Alabama? No Democrat's going to win Alabama, but it is a target-rich environment for delegates.
All right, let's talk about the African-American vote for a second. So the story is that Buttigieg is struggling with the African-American vote, but looking more broadly at what's happening here, the African-American vote, the black vote in America, is starting to wake up to the fact that they've got record low unemployment, and they increasingly are seeing Trump as the guy who is responsible for a large number of jobs. Kanye West, of course, with his visits to the White House, attracted some derision at first, but, you know, his appeal seems to be growing. This could be kind of a big factor in 2020, Randy. You have your feet on the ground and eyes on the electorate more than I do. What do you think about this?
Well, of course it could be a big factor. I mean, in order to win the Democratic nomination, you're going to have to win the African-American vote, which is a large percentage of the Democratic side. And to win a national election, typically Democrats benefit from the fact that the African-American vote, by and large, in huge numbers, votes for Democratic candidates. If the Republicans are able to split that by making this economic argument, it could, in theory, return Trump to the White House. But there are questions to ask about those economic gains that you're referencing.
Well, actually, let's look at a state by state issue. And that's with the governor races that we just saw down in the South, Kentucky and Louisiana. And it was an economic issue, I think, that fundamentally was the reason why the Democrats won those deep red state governorships. And that's Medicare for All. It was a big issue in Kentucky, and it was a big issue in Louisiana. The Republican, there was a majority of Republican voters in Louisiana, a majority support Medicare, but Obamacare Medicaid expansion. So a majority of Republicans support it in Louisiana. So this is actually turning out to be a big issue, the expansion of Medicaid, i.e. close to Medicare for All for certain people.
I totally agree. And what's funny about what you point out is in both of those elections, when you look down ballot, Republicans did quite well. Some people look at that and say, oh, look, we managed to win with a conservative Democrat in Louisiana or a down-the-middle centrist in Kentucky. But then when you focus more upon who their opponents were, the incumbent in Kentucky was highly unpopular precisely because he was not for Medicaid expansion and he was getting into all kinds of trouble with teachers, for example. And then down in Louisiana, what's a huge issue is healthcare. My conclusion is that some of the policies being pushed by Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, which are precisely about healthcare, are the ones that resonate with the electorate. But these neoliberal centrists come away and say, we need more middle-of-the-road type of candidates. And what I say, what's in the middle of the road are armadillos, and armadillos get crushed. You don't need middle-of-the-road candidates.
Well, exactly. So that's what Obama should have been told. Louisiana went for the Democrat. And if you look at all the ads and if you look at the data and and all the coverage locally down in Louisiana, you saw Medicaid expansion was a huge part of it. So Obama would have told those people, don't, that's too left wing. You have too many Republicans as a red state. Don't talk about that. But in fact, there was a majority of Republicans supported it.
I think that President Obama, who I'm a great admirer of and worked on his campaign, needs to understand that when people voted for hope and change, they were voting for this type of change. And in fact, he needs to go back and really look at Martin Luther King, who wrote his letter from the jail that basically was arguing against incrementalism. MLK was saying, we have to take these great leaps forward. And you're not going to take a great leap forward just, you know, discussing tax policy for billionaires. You're going to take a great leap forward by expanding healthcare options, by actually taxing the billionaire class, not by running a billionaire.
Right. Well, why can't a Democrat say that they're going to roll back Medicare from 65 to 50? You know, if they were to do that, I'd vote for them.
I think that they feel that they can't do that because they're always fooled in this notion of, you know, how we do our budgeting by not really understanding that at the federal level, we control the money supply. But that's
Medicare at 50 years old is cheaper than Medicaid for all Medicare for all.
I agree with you. It would be cheaper.
So when Elizabeth Warren says, oh, it's a $50 trillion light on the budget to do Medicare for all, I mean, that's a big number. It's a big ask. But if you just say, hey, we're going to roll it back to 50, see how that goes, and then we'll take it from there. I mean, immediately, I'm going to go for that. I mean, that applies to me. Hits my pocketbook immediately. I would go for that.
I also think it's about the marketing, Max. I mean, it's about a family doctor for everyone. Nobody really loves their insurance company. They love the doctor that they visit.
Well, it's also about the fact that it costs well over $1 billion these days to run a national campaign. So if you're running for president, you need billions of dollars. And where does it come from? But the very corporations milking the taxpayer. I was just looking for an article out from, the Republicans. There's a Republican congressperson who submitted a bill to basically force transparent pricing at hospitals, because this is a huge issue in this country, is that sometimes you don't know for several months what they actually charged you when you went to the doctor after a procedure, an emergency room visit or something like that. And what this Republican was looking to introduce, but which is being overlooked because of the impeachment trials, is that in these states, and there's a lot of, you know, of the middle of the country, more rural sort of states where there's a hospital monopoly, he wants to introduce that they have to basically use Medicare pricing, unless there's competition in the market, that they have to accept Medicare pricing. They have to compete with that.
Well, what's really interesting about what you reference is that in most everything we do, we go to a restaurant, for instance, or we go to an auto body shop, we demand to actually see what it's going to cost for the services. But somehow, when we get into this black hole of the healthcare system, we have no idea. Even riding an ambulance to the hospital in many places, you have no idea that it's not going to get covered, or you have to fight like heck to get paid for having a heart attack and going to the hospital.
Right. Well, this falls under the category of capitalism versus socialism. So in my view, and this is where we agree a lot, there is room in the economy in areas like healthcare, education, and transportation for government to be managing those systems. They shouldn't be managing areas of entrepreneurialism. Okay. That's clearly not their strength. But in the case of healthcare, the private sector will always act in a predatory manner. Even Adam Smith said in his famous works that when you put two or more businessmen together in a room, they will collude, right? Anytime you privatize healthcare, there's going to be price collusion, there's going to be manipulation, and that's what we've seen. And prices are skyrocketing and the services are declining. Health expectancy or life expectancy in America is going down, right? So if this is working, it would be going up.
Well, you have to question the notion that healthcare should be a for-profit enterprise. Really, healthcare should be something that's provided to all the citizens, and it's good for us when people are healthy.
I do agree with that. You know, and it seems like an obvious argument to make. It shouldn't be for profit in healthcare. Plus, when you get a network together like healthcare, there are a tremendous amount of externalities, as it's called in economics, where you just put a lot of doctors and nurses together. They're going to work together and create an ecosystem of health. If you have everyone competing with each other, that's gone. And now it's all about creating disease. It's a disease industry, not a health industry.
Right. I mean, and a lot of times they don't want to pay for actually doing preventative measures. They're more than willing to pay for prescribing expensive pharmacopoeia.
Okay. And in the last 30 seconds here, Pete Buttigieg is soaring ahead in Iowa. Do you think his chances look real there?
Well, there's something to be said for people that are peaking too soon.
Oh, really? What's that mean?
It means in politics, sometimes you want to time when you're peaking. You can see that we've had people that have gone out to the front in this campaign already in the past, and then the rest of the candidates kind of pull them back. The crab pot theory. They all grab on. Let's watch what happens during the debates coming up.
Well said. Well, looking forward to it. And that's going to do it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. I'd like to thank our guest, Randy Voller. You can see him soon on a new series with Max and Stacey called Front Running. Sounds good. Until next time, bye, y'all.